406, it is the People's Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. It is the People's Show, and Kevin Woodley is going to join us here in a couple of moments as the Canucks get ready for the Philadelphia Flyers tomorrow night. We've got a pair of lower bowl seats that will be given away at some point during the course of today's program. The Flyers are taking on the undefeated Edmonton Oilers tonight. And that was one of the things about last night's game against Minnesota. They're playing their third game in four nights. Canucks are at home and rested following their long road trip. But it seemed like Minnesota was the team with more energy in the system towards the end of last night's game.
Yeah, see, I don't have time for the whole, like, oh, they're kind of tired coming off a road trip.
Yeah.
I mean, Minnesota's played two back-to-backs. They're playing three games in four nights. And they weren't tired last night. I mean, you know, the Canucks had 2 days off between games. I know you're coming back from a six-game road trip, but you still had 2 days off. After that, before that Buffalo game, they had 2 days off, and they pulled, a bit of a no-show in that game as well. So, you know, the whole energy thing, I don't find that as an excuse for this team, especially when you see other squads deal with the same thing, and they showed enough energy here. So, like, I don't have any time for the, oh, yeah, I know, they're kind of tired, they're kind of gassed, you know. Like, no, like, other teams are dealing with the same thing, and they don't look like look as tired as you guys are looking.
Yeah, the Wild were well-prepared. They play a smothering style. Devin Evason has them locked in to start in this year, and, you know, even when their stars, like Kaprizov, didn't really shine. You barely noticed them. You know, Kevin Fiala had a good game. But the way that they play is just a very difficult style to break down, and they were ready. And the Canucks, you can talk about the offensive challenges all you want. You can talk about the system and maybe not having it fully immersed throughout your entire squad and maybe the learning curve and all of that. Minnesota was ready to go. And that's going to be a difficult team in that Central Division, guys. Like, they, if they get in, I can tell you right now, Hartman, Greenway, and Foligno in the playoffs, nobody wants to play that line. That is a punch you in your face line that is going to weigh on you, lean on you a little bit. That's a difficult team to play.
Let's welcome in our next guest, In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. It's Kevin Woodley. How's it going, Kevin?
It's good. How are you guys?
We're doing well. I'm digging the new hairdo. You lost a few pounds with all the hair you shed.
Well, I figure when you wait an entire year to get a haircut, you might as well get your money's worth. So it's all gone.
It's always fun to have fans back in the building, but the Canucks didn't really give them a lot to cheer about last night. The offense just continues to not really click. What are you seeing with this Canucks team?
You know what? I'm starting to wonder how much of this is just small samples and finish. We talked last week, looking at some of the numbers from Clearside Analytics, and started to wonder a little bit about, they were so much better against the rush. I think they were second in the league when we talked in terms of the number of high danger rush chances they were giving up after being dead last in the league last year. And hey, was that at the expense of, offense on the other end? And here we are just a couple of games later, and they've slid, especially after a night like last night, they've slid into sort of 15th or 16th in the league in rush chances against. Like, we are talking about small samples that can vary widely. And one of the things when I was digging through the numbers today in terms of, is the system limiting them offensively, or are they just not executing on some of the chances, they're generating? Like, it's not all rosy, but slot line plays, lateral plays that go across the middle of the ice, below the bottom of the circle, or between the top of the circle and the goal line, so the slot area, plays that go side to side, force a goalie to move, one of the best ways to score in today's NHL. They've generated 13 slot line plays, which may not sound like a lot in seven games, but their expected goals on them is 4.7, which is fourth in the NHL. Like, that's not a number that says to me this team is not generating offense when they're fourth in slot line plays, one of the types of plays you want to generate offense with. Problem is, they haven't converted a single one. Like, their expected goals is almost five. They've got zero on those plays. So, are we having a different conversation if there's five more goals in the bank for them right now? If Brock Besser on his two-on-one elevates above the pad last night the same way that Matt Dumba did. Now, there were differences in the plays. Brock's is a tougher pass to take because he's coming downhill on that one time, or he doesn't really get a chance to open up that much. Whereas Dumba, it's more of a low to high pass, so it's like being threaded into his wheelhouse. But in terms of taking a two-on-one and turning it into a goal, the difference is one guy elevates and the other doesn't. I mean, if Dumba slams that along the ice, Demko's there, right? So is the difference at this point, as we talk about some players who either miss time like Brock because of injury or Pettersson because of the contract situation and slow starts, is the difference just execution in those scoring chance areas? I'm not saying it's all that, because we're obviously watching the game too, and it doesn't feel like they're generating as much, but at least one example there where it's not quite as bad as maybe it feels after a night like last night. Now, still overall, like, they're in the bottom of the league, like, you know, in terms of generating high danger chances overall, they're in the bottom third. They're 23rd right now. But I still kind of feel like some of the types of chances they've created, they just haven't executed finishing. And, you know, when you have that kind of talent, you trust that will come.
Yeah, see, I'm not worried about that either. I think it's going to kind of come. They look kind of labored at times. I think that's what's kind of caught our attention so far. But I do find it interesting because there's a lot of talk of systems, especially defensively, what the team is doing and not doing. And people are pointing the finger at the system for what happened last night. But we saw the plays that happened last night, Kevin. There were breakdowns that led to goals. So when people talk about system and wonder about defensive systems, are you seeing some systemic issues here with what they're doing defensively, or is it a case of those breakdowns happening?
Listen, like, they've done a good job up until last night of not giving up as many of those rush-type breakdowns and making those big mistakes that give you clear, you know, I mean, clear-cut breakaways from the blue line. You know, as a matter of fact, when it comes to breakaways, I mean, they've given up 8 already. They're like 27th in the league. Broken plays, again, plays around the net that hit bodies and go, like, they've given up more expected goals there than anyone in the league. They're 32nd. So it's not all rosy defensively. I think they have been better overall against the rush. But there are times, like, let's be honest, when they're in their own end, where you're waiting for the music to start, like, like, there's a little bit of still work to do on end zone defensive zone coverage. I think the numbers bear that out in terms of where they rank on some of the chances once plays settled in their own end. And I think, you know, there's probably some of that was expected when you thought about the personnel and some of the areas this team might struggle. So as much as they've done better against the rush, not so much yet, at least in terms of in their own end. And, you know, you guys have been there. You can see it. You kind of feel it when they get pinned at times and get chasing a little bit, and those chances and possession time as well as chances start to mount.
Looking ahead, the next opponent that they have is tomorrow night, the Philadelphia Flyers. Philly's in Edmonton tonight. Carter Hart's getting that start, which makes you think Marty Jones will get the start here in Vancouver, North Van's own. When we look at him, and obviously that San Jose, the final chapter there was not a good one for him. You know, we often talk about bounce back factor. Is there one with Martin Jones?
I certainly think it's possible. And I say that because there were signs early last season of it. Philadelphia wasn't the only team that kicked the tires on Martin Jones. I know other goalie coaches around the league who, you know, did some homework on him, reached out with some questions, because we've done a little bit of work and seen some of the work he's done in the off season. Some of the people he works with, or I should say, has finally started to work with in the past couple of off seasons. After for years, on purpose, basically just playing shinny. Like, he went away from, like, not a lot of people know. It's like Martin Jones. I remember watching Martin Jones as a 15-year-old at Rogers Arena, BC Play or GM Place at the time, working with Ian Clark. And because of Ian's oldest son and Dylan Crawford, Mark Crawford's son, were goalies. And obviously Martin's dad managed the arena and ran the facilities there. And so they would be out on the ice together. And even coming up through then, undrafted into the Kings, he was a quote unquote technically strong technical goaltender. And I think there was a point there where he tried to get away from that. He wanted to get more back to the instincts and not be too sort of pre-programmed. And on purpose, he started just basically not going to goalie school in the summer and instead playing a lot of shinny. And somewhere along the way, that sliding scale tipped in the wrong direction, to the point where over the past couple of years, like, when you look at his technical game, and I've had goalie coaches that know his game pretty well, say, like, it had deteriorated to a barely AHL level. There was no rotation in his movement. He came across flat. If you basically forced him to move left to right, he couldn't get back to his post. He would come across in a straight line, and you could just stretch him out until, there was space between him and the post and fire into the open net. And maybe that's a little exaggerated, but quite literally, having done some of the breakdown and video work heading into playoffs, it was there. You could do that. And he really has gone to school. You know, you've heard me mention this name with Mike Smith, with Connor Hellebuck, with some of the other guys. Went back to school in the summer with Adam Francilia, who the Sharks hired, sort of starting off the ice and training and adding some rotation into his movement, changing the way he moves. And there have been signs. There were signs on video. When the guys kicking the tires looked at video, especially early last season, they liked what they saw. The question marks came with, why couldn't he maintain it? Why did he sort of go back to old Martin Jones as the season went on? And so that's the task in Philadelphia, is to sort of keep chipping away at those technical foundation elements, because the fact he even survived in the NHL, as bad as it was at times the last couple of years with the Sharks, with that type of movement, with barely AHL type movement patterns and foundation, and he still met, like, there's something there. There's a skill there. There's an ability to read the game there that allowed him to still play in the league. And so if you can get some of that foundational movement back, yeah, I think there is a possibility for a bounce back. Am I calling Martin Jones for a Vezina trophy, or, you know, even as optimistic as I was with Mike Smith, who worked with the same off-ice trainer the past two summers? You know, no, maybe not. But I do think there's an opportunity there for him to at least take strides back towards the goalie he was. I don't think, as much as he's become a punchline around the league and an easy target, I think there's still a goalie there. And I think some of the work he's finally got back to doing the past couple of summers will give him a chance to show that.
How hard is it for goalies to sustain it when they are, you know, making these changes? We used to see it similarly, I guess, with Markstrom, where he'd get a big run of games, not as much practice time, and his game would start to trail off a little bit. How hard is it to sustain these changes and progress you're making in season?
I mean, I guess in season it becomes more difficult. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that Martin's game, you know, in the eyes of, again, not just my eyes, but in the eyes of people who are being paid to make the decision on, do we pursue this guy once he was bought out, deteriorated as the season went on, because, you know, a couple things, right? Like, A, like, listen, it's also, it has been, you know, you've got either Burns or Carlson on the ice at all times. They give up a lot off the rush. So there's that. A tough environment defensively has been traditionally for the past few years. But, you know, Dubnyk gets traded. All of a sudden, Martin's playing a little bit more. He also loses that push. Maybe that has something to do with it. The goaltending consultant wasn't there full-time. He was more of a in with the AHL team, in with the NHL team, but not all the time. Like, they had Nabokov as the coach, but the guy I talked about working off-ice with the Sharks, he's not in all the time. And, yeah, you got to do the work. You got to stay on it. Like, it takes a long time for that stuff to become instinctual. And if you back off, whether it's because you're playing too much or just because you don't feel like you need it anymore, you know, I always compare to golf, right? Like, back nine, Sunday, in a tournament, under pressure, making swing changes. We always hear that on the PGA Tour. That's when the old swing comes in and you get double-crossed. Whether it's fatigue or pressure, or there's a number of different elements that can cause it, the old habits will come back into the game if you don't keep working on building the new habits to the point where they become so instinctual, they're your old habits and they're not something you have to think about out there. That's just how you move. He didn't get there. I think with another summer of work, and again, finally doing the work in the summer versus just playing shinny, doing very position specific work, he's got a chance to get closer to that and hold on to it a lot longer this year. But, you know, it's on him to sort of prove that he can. And it helps having a relationship. Kim Dillabaugh is an excellent goaltending coach, spent time over on Vancouver Island in the off seasons, and a relationship that Martin built when he was in the Kings organization in the minors there. Kim was their right-hand man to Billy Ranford. And so probably reuniting with him will help with a little bit of that confidence as well.
Well, and, you know, this just makes me start thinking back to what the Canucks were able to bring back Ian Clarke on that five-year deal, right? Have him here alongside of Thatcher Demko for the next few years, and also have the goalies underneath working. I mean, around the league, how big of an advantage does that give you, not just in Vancouver, if you build a system like that where a guy's in place for well over five, six, 7 years working with the same guys?
Yeah, I think you saw that pay dividends in Columbus, because it's not just the guys in the pro level, it's the guys in the minor leagues. And, you know, full credit to the organization It goes beyond the commitment to Ian. I'm not sure how many people know this, but Curtis Sanford wasn't full-time before in the minor leagues. He is now. He's moved to Abbotsford. I actually just got back from Abbotsford where I was watching him work with Archer Silovs and Spencer Martin and talked to Spencer and spent a good 45 minutes with Curtis after practice today. And like that's a big step. That's an important step, especially with three goalies out there. That continuity in terms of principles. Curtis is a guy who will tell you, you know, his first time with Ian as a goalie coach was halfway through his career. And he's like, oh my God, like it's all new. Like how am I in the NHL not knowing this stuff? And so Curtis brings his own experiences to working with Ian too, because there's a lot of detail and it can be overwhelming at times. And Curtis has been on the other side of that. So I think that helps him working with these young guys as well. Like, you know, being able to relate to the position they're in, because he was in it himself, even halfway through his career. So I think it goes beyond Ian, although obviously that's the, you know, of the pyramid, that's the foundation. But Curtis committing to being a full-time goaltending coach and moving out here, the organization being willing to commit to having a guy full-time. You know, you see it in the work that was done in drafting a guy like Silov. And Dan Kluche deserves credit there too, along with Ian Clark, a guy who I think even in the org, there were people that were like, really? You think this guy's an NHL? Like, when he arrived, like it was just purely based on skill assessment, and they've taught the technique, they've built that foundation. You can see that still work to do, but starting to come along and starting to see results, and all that raw potential that they identified along with the scouts now starting to be formed in a mold that is being reinforced in the American Hockey League and is going to not change unless the position changes and evolves. But, you know, in terms of their foundation and what they do is going to be the same as he moves through the American League and up hopefully in, you know, at some point into the National Hockey League. There, that foundation, that consistency, not trying to reinvent the wheel every couple of years, it goes a long way. I talk to goalies all over the league, and Spencer Martin's been through this a little bit. You go to different organizations, you've got a new voice. You try to learn new things from new voices, add tools to the toolbox, as goalies like to say. Some you want to put right in the toolbox. Others, it's like, hey, that doesn't work for me. I'll just leave that one. But sometimes you can get caught trying to please different masters. And you sort of get in a position where, you know, yeah, this doesn't work for me. But this is the goalie coach that decides whether I play, you know, one of the next three or three of the next three. So I better do it his way. And so don't underestimate the value of that continuity here. In the American League and the working relationship that Ian and Curtis Sanford have. And like I said, credit the org for investing in both, you know, Ian being back for 5 years, but also Curtis being here full time and, you know, comfortable enough with where things are going that he moves his whole family out to Abbotsford to be there.
Last one, Kevin, and it's on the Edmonton Oilers. They've got Philadelphia tonight, and we'll be playing the Canucks on Saturday. Their goaltending has been a big discussion point in our conversations here on the People Show. They've lost Mike Smith to an injury early on this season, but so far so good for the Edmonton Oilers goaltending.
Yeah, and I think it'll be so far so good as long as Mike Smith's absences are not long term. And that's nothing against Mikko Koskinen. He had a tough year last year. I don't know if you guys heard when he talked to the media about just how tough it was off the ice, left his family behind, wasn't there with him, and how much of an impact that had. But I think a lot of people forget that, like Koskinen's an easy target. And I'm not saying he's worth the ticket he got or that ticket was a good idea, that contract was a good idea. But 2 years ago, his adjusted numbers were top 10 in the NHL in terms of save percentage. Yes, it looks awkward at times. Yes, teams are clearly targeting the crap out of the glove hand. And when he doesn't get set early in proper rotation, it's something I would target too. But he's a big body who moves pretty well, not great, but well enough at the NHL level to get in front of a lot of pucks and just get in the way of a lot of pucks. And so I think in a 1B mold, he's more than capable. What you saw last year was Mike Smith goes down. They didn't have a plan C, which was their fault. They kept nine defensemen rather than an NHL goaltender on the taxi squad. Like, it was absurd, frankly, that decision. Didn't trust Stuart Skinner at the time. They play Mikko 10 straight. He is a goalie that 100% needs time with the goalie coach, needs his breaks, needs to still manage his game. You run him out there 10 in a row, you saw what happened, and that will happen again. Lucky right now with Smith out, they've got a real easy schedule, right? Like two games this week, Wednesday, tonight, Canucks on Saturday. They've been off since Saturday, like perfect situation. I believe Mike Smith, as I've said before, is perfectly capable of not only repeating but building on last year. But in fairness, age is a question. It's undefeated. He's been injured already. If this becomes something that's ongoing or nagging or continuous over the season, then the questions about their goaltending depth are fair. But with Smith healthy as a one and Koskinen limited service, they're fine as long as they keep defending like they have been. The one thing, one caveat I'll throw out there as well, the final game, the one where Mike Smith was hurt, they started trading rush chances. I think it was in Anaheim. Like, they just basically decided, we're going to have rush chances, you're going to have rush chances. It's like they flashed back to being the Islanders under Doug Weight, and it was an all-star game. And you saw Mike Smith exposed a little bit there. Like, end zone, he's fine. You become a team that gives up like half a dozen odd man rushes and rush chances in a game, and as much as his movement has improved, he's still not a guy that sort of skates backwards well. He's more of a spot-to-spot play deep in the net. And you saw him sort of not only get exposed a little bit, but maybe even sustain the injury, because every time he goes across the ice on a lateral play, it's into his posts rather than out in front of his posts. And he slams that big aging body hard into those posts. And I can't help but wonder if that even contributed to the injury, because he went in hard a couple times on those lateral rush chances.
Kevin, we appreciate the time as always. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
There is Kevin Woodley, NHL.com. and InGoal Magazine. A couple of things before we hit the break, as we continue to follow what happened out with the Chicago Blackhawks investigation and some of the fallout from that. Kyle Beach revealed himself as the John Doe in the investigation today. 2010 Blackhawk was a 2008 11th overall pick out of North Vancouver, of course, and he revealed himself as the victim in the situation. He is quoted to say, there is no way Joel Quenneville did not know about what happened, in the interview with TSN today. Joel Quenneville is currently coaching the Florida Panthers. He is supposed to meet with Commissioner Gary Bettman tomorrow. And on top of that, Jonathan Toews is now off of the COVID-19 list and is going to play for the Chicago Blackhawks tonight. So we may hear from Jonathan Toews before the night is out.
I mean, what a lack of leadership from the league. We talked about how soft the penalty was to the Blackhawks from the league's perspective, $2 million, which isn't good enough. And a lot of fear, the way I view it, from the NHL to really dig into these things and really make people accountable. Mm-hmm. And the PA, NHL
well, even
PA,
the way, you know, they let Stan Bowman go,
yeah.
He let him go out
on his own terms.
He stepped aside.
Yeah, they let him
it
go out on his
decision.
Own. And to me, that whole thing about him is like, I didn't know about the allegation. It was completely ass covering. He just wanted plausible deniability. The only reason Stan Bowman, in my estimation, my belief, my opinion, is that he didn't ask what the nature of the allegations mm-hmm. were, is because he knew that if he knew the nature of the allegations, he would always have to answer for it. And if he doesn't know, he can always have plausible deniability. I didn't know. Hey, you know. Hey, I did what I could. It's my fault for trusting the executives. It's a
similar
complete cop-out.
Similar with Cheveldayoff.
Same thing. Complete cop-out. They're just covering their asses. That's all they're doing. The NHL has shown a complete lack of leadership in this whole situation. How do you let Joel Quenneville get behind the bench? You have Kyle Beach laying it all out on national TV today, and Joel Quenneville's part of that story. Are you just going to let him coach an NHL game today?
Yeah.
You know, it is absolutely disgusting how tone-deaf this league can be and how it seriously lacks leadership. For a league that is so smitten by leaders and heart and doing the right thing and having players that band together and, you know, show leadership, do it the right way, you aren't doing anything right now. This is a complete gross negligence. And the fact that the league is showing zero leadership in this situation is very telling to me.
It's a failing on multiple levels. The NHL, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
As an employer, the Florida Panthers, looking at the situation, should be saying, there's no way you're coaching this. As an individual, you should be looking at this and saying, this is not right. I should not be coaching this. So there are multiple layers of just failing after failing after failing. And beyond that, guys, statements are great where you're saying winning championships or games doesn't matter as long as we take care of individuals. But what's happening right now? You're coaching a game where you're hoping to beat the Boston Bruins tonight after coming out with statements and saying all the right things. If you're a league and if you stand by what your organizations and what the people in this league have been saying, even if it's 24 hours, even if it's 48 hours, while you figure out what's going on, while you have those conversations, after such a powerful and important statement from Kyle Beach, at the very least, before, you know, while everything is being sorted out, while these discussions are going on, take him out of the game, reset, and then come back once you have an understanding of where things are. That is the important thing to do, and that is how you follow up that statement from the Blackhawks where they're saying, hey, winning games is not as important as taking care of individuals. Within an hour of that statement, you see this happen from another franchise in the league. I'd like to say I'm surprised, but I'm not, because we've seen this numerous times
in
sports.
We know the league is spineless, right? And when it comes to real matters, they've always been spineless.
They have, and this is a perfect example. If Quenneville doesn't want to take himself away from the bench until this situation, until he gets to have his interview with Gary Bettman, and whether or not his employment continues beyond that is still another question mark, but just step aside until you have that discussion with the commissioner. If he doesn't say it himself, the Panthers should step in. Bettman should step in. Somebody should step in, because this is not right. And it continues to just snowball on the league the more that they just hope, I don't know, it goes away. Like, what are they hoping happens right now? This is it.
They weren't expecting Kyle Beach to come out and reveal himself today as John Doe, as a player who was allegedly sexually abused by Brad Aldrich, who was a then video coach of the Blackhawks in 2010.
And as Kyle Beach said in the interview too, it became pretty apparent after the investigation came out, you know, and the internet sleuths started to figure it out themselves because of the information that was revealed in the report. All signs did point to him or a very small number of other players. So it was process of elimination. It became pretty much known, and he mentioned that when he spoke today. But a tremendous amount of courageousness from him, and continually not so much from others.
Here's a question, unsigned. If Mr. Beach would have come to the media, do you think they would have exposed it? There are some indications that media in Chicago back in 2010, at least some, had some knowledge. Obviously didn't come out. And there's a responsibility when you are part of the media. Now, these things can be difficult because you don't have this right. It's a career ender. And that's just the truth. That's why you see a lot of media be afraid of really going after these things. Because if you get a story like this wrong, it's a really, really tough one, right? So there needs to be a lot of courage from media as well to tackle these stories. That's why we have all the respect in the world for Rick Westhead and Katie Strang and the work they've done. It takes a lot to do this. The real hero here, or the real, I wouldn't even call him a hero, but the real person with courage and bravery is Kyle Beach. But if we're talking about people uncovering the story, to the texter's point, allegedly there were media that may have known about it in Chicago and nobody did anything about it.
There's a lot of behind the scenes work as well. When, you know, Rick Westhead and the way that he has been going after this story is an amazing job. But behind the scenes, you know, when you are coming out with these allegations and this story, you have to make sure it's lawyered up, it's run through lawyers in multiple rounds. There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff we don't see, so it's not as simple as just going on air and saying something. You have to make sure that everything, you know, behind the scenes is run through the company, and make sure that anything that you're coming with on air is also, you know, looked at and prepped in that sense as well. So credit to Rick Westhead for not only telling the story, but telling it in a fair way, an important story to share. And thank you to Kyle Beach, obviously, for sharing his story with Rick Westhead and now the world.
Yeah, and of course it can be hard to prove these types of things, because in a lot of cases it is a one person's word against another's. But when you have an allegation as serious as this, you have to see it through to the end. And it's unfortunate that nobody did until now. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Jain. We'll keep following the story as it continues to develop. It's the People's Show on Sportsnet 650. People's Show presented by Grip Auto and Tire. Quality service you can trust in 14 locations to serve you. Not Saying Just Saying is coming up, but we do have a citizen of the People's Show on the phone lines. Josh in Vancouver. Josh, what are you feeling about the Canucks right now?
Hey guys, how you doing?
Good, man.
Oh, I'm feeling pretty good. Like, I was at the game last night. You know, the first thing I just want to quickly talk about is just, you know, how good of a job I felt like the organization did for, you know, bringing the fans in for the first home game. I felt like they moved people in really fast. Like, I was thinking we were going to have to go pretty early just to get in, you know, checking vaccine passports and everything. But I got to really commend them. It moved really quick, to tell you the truth.
Cool. How do you feel about the team on the ice right now?
Well, I'll get to that. One more thing I just want to also say is that that opening presentation, that Avengers kind of Star Wars, that was so awesome. That was, to me, the best one they've ever done. So I just wanted to quickly point that out.
Yeah, they just they need Pettersson to start playing like a Jedi, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's for sure. But, yeah, overall, you know, a few things that I kind of took from the game last night, you know, and being there is, you know, I think that the Canucks might – like, they're trying to get the perfect shots a lot of time, and we see that on the power play. But I also think that even at even strength, they're not getting the pucks to the net and getting second-chance opportunities enough, you know, from rebounds and that kind of thing. I think it's really important they start crashing the net more and getting dirty goals. And then the second thing is I think there's a little – they have to improve their situational awareness a little bit better. You know, Minnesota's third goal, it came off of a missed opportunity shot that was, I think the Canucks were either on a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2 or something like that.
Right.
And I can't remember who was shooting, but
Besser.
They blew the shot over the net. It went right around the boards. And that's what kind of started the whole counterattack that Minnesota went off on and scored. So I think there has to be some more situational awareness when you're really, you know, taking that shot.
Thanks for the call, Josh. We got to move on. Appreciate it. You know, those situations are going to happen. What happened afterwards was Burrow's pinch and the subsequent, you know, there was no protection for Burrow's after he missed the play on the pinch and was not unable to keep the puck in the zone, and Minnesota quickly transitioned and got the odd man rush going back the other way. Those things are going to happen when you're pressing for an equalizer, and I'm not going to worry about it too much, but all the goals last night were just simple defensive breakdowns. And from the Canucks offensively, get into the dirty areas. Yeah, they've got to get closer to the net. Is it, you know, it's easy to just say, get pucks on net and try to bang in a rebound, tip a puck, you know, get into those dirty areas in the blue paint and all those things. They're nice cliches to say. They're a lot harder to accomplish. And also, you have to... those aren't the only ways to score goals. The Canucks have ultra-skilled guys. You know, they should be able to get closer to the net, get more quality scoring chances when they're out there.
Yeah, you want to be able to keep an opposing team guessing. And, you know, we talked about it earlier. When the lotto line is broken up, what style are they playing individually? But when they're together, those controlled zone entries, that is that their thing, the transition game. You know, just because Garland, Tanner Pearson, and Bo Horvat play a certain way or have shown to be successful early on this year playing a certain way, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be the same style for everybody. Mm-hmm. So looking forward, let's see, A, you need your star player to step up and, you know, be a little bit more confident. That's, I think, goes, we've talked about that a lot. But you also need, you know, those other guys that you were talking about. It's not only Pettersson. You just need that X-factor player to provide that spark in a game. And that's kind of what they've been missing thus far, is that all those other guys, the Bessers, the Millers, they have to be consistent. But I think just having that whole line just to you know, to flash like they have in the past, that's going to give this team a huge boost of confidence that they need right now, because it feels like they have it in spurts, but that identity as it's forming, you just need a little bit more of that shine from the top of the line, of the lineup.
You know, and that's really what it comes down to. And it was interesting talking to Woodley and him kind of breaking down that in the slot area, they've had some chances. They just haven't, you know, buried it. And if you score a few of those, then the confidence kind of comes back. And, you know, if of those five really good chances that he talked about, they have zero. And usually you probably have a couple of goals in that instance. And maybe we're having a different conversation if two or three of those go in, right? But I do think it all kind of comes back hand in hand with your top players. And then that confidence, that feeling good, or that rhythm just isn't there yet. And, you know, I do wonder how much of it is overthinking it in terms of analysis, because it's early in the season. Had this, let's say this 7-game stretch happened and they got 7 points in 7 games, say from game 52 to 59. Does anybody really bat an eye?
Yeah, probably not.
Probably not. It's like, yeah, well, the lulls in the season, whatever. They'll be fine. You know, nobody's really worried about it. Maybe every once in a while somebody might complain or some little conversation. But for the most part, you're like, yeah, there are 507 games. Whoop-de-doo, they'll be fine. But there isn't a bank of goodwill built up so far this year. There isn't a bank of, from last year, looking at, okay, they finished the season strong. These guys were on rhythm. You're kind of looking at what happened last year and looking at the bad and looking at the bad now, and you don't have that confidence that it will turn. But honestly, that top six isn't going to be in the red all season. I just can't see. There's too much talent for those guys to be consistently outchanced every single night.
Yeah, too much talent is the right way to put it. And, you know, the prevailing thought on Pettersson from last year is that he struggled, right? Even though, you know, he finished at a point per game pace through the final 20 games before getting hurt, it never really left anybody's minds that he had a bad start to the season. And then he got hurt. So that is still very much baked into a lot of people's thoughts and processes on Elias Pettersson to this point. All right, let's get to Not Saying, Just Saying. Faber, hit the music. On the People's Show. Every day after 4:40. Not saying, just saying. Get in on the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650. I'll start it off. I'm not saying the World Series is boring. I'm just saying I'd rather have seen a repeat of the Houston Cheaters and the Dodgers.
Mm. Okay, if Atlanta wins, I don't mind the result. I just don't care about watching it. Like, I'd rather have Atlanta win than the Dodgers.
I'd be happy for my guy Alex Anthopoulos. That's what I would be happy about.
Yeah. Anthopoulos is also overrated.
Not if he wins a World Series, Sat. Then all of a sudden.
I'm talking about him with the Blue Jays. That's all. Yeah. Okay. Now he's done a good job with the Braves. And I'm kind of joking about the Blue Jays. He did some good stuff, of course. I mean, Vladdy's here because of, you know.
Anthopoulos. Going on a spending spree.
Yes.
You went all in.
All in. But, you know.
Nobody's watching.
I'm not saying I hate baseball. I love baseball. I'm not saying I don't love baseball. I'm just saying sometimes I hate baseball. I really do.
It's like a love-hate relationship.
It's a real, like, I love baseball, but then it drives me nuts when a team has, like, 88 wins and they're in the World Series. And I know they made some trade deadline deals and they're better than, you know, the record may indicate or whatever, but it's like 88 wins, barely make the playoffs. You have teams with 91 wins not making the playoffs, and it's like they're in the World Series. Like, it kind of grinds my gears.
I think that's a consensus that three of us are probably not watching this World Series. Okay, I got one here.
Okay.
I'm not saying Lionel Messi broke them. I'm just saying Barcelona is a mess since they lost him. They fired their manager, Ronald Koeman, today. They're ninth in the league. And that whole juggernaut of a team that would compete for titles, hey, they still might get in the top four. They still might be in the top two for all we know. But man, they're a mess without him.
Mm-hmm.
Barcelona, by the way.
Barcelona, actually, if you want to be authentic, Reach.
Yeah, yeah, be authentic,
come on.
Reach. He's like, I'm being authentic Italian with everything.
I'm not saying I don't have time for this. I'm just saying I have time for this. Oh,
so,
thank you.
No, that's so this person texted in earlier and said they're tired of hearing me say I have time for this or I don't have time for this. So I texted back and said, I don't have time for your criticism. So now person texts back and says, I don't saying I'm not saying I don't have time for this. I'm just saying I have time for this.
Okay.
The person is still here. So that's good.
He's a member of the People Show. Pricer, also a member of the People Show. Not saying I don't enjoy music, just saying my radio never leaves 650. Cheers to the boys, Sat, Randeep, and even Reach.
Oh, wow.
And even Reach. Poor, what a backhanded compliment.
That is a backhanded compliment.
That's a pricer.
Unbelievable. What did I do to deserve this type of treatment?
Barcelona is what you did.
Yeah. I mean, that's essentially it. But as far as versatility goes, I think you showed your value the past couple of weeks here at Reach.
Yeah. Little color commentary on top of everything else. It's been fun. All right. More coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Did want to get this one in. I'm not saying Drew Doughty is off of Team Canada. I'm just saying this injury certainly won't help his cause for making the Olympic roster.
Yeah, that's a rough one. I was almost the captain of the team of getting Drew Doughty on the Olympic team.
Yeah.
And this is a rough one. He's playing really well. He was motivated. And just a rough, rough injury for him, man. I feel bad for him just because you know how he's motivated. And I know in Vancouver he doesn't have the biggest fans because of a team like that comment.
Yeah.
But Is he good for hockey? Is he a fiery competitor? Does he get you talking?
Yeah.
Of course he does.
It's really an unfortunate hockey play. Like, thinking back on it, Yanni Hakanpää, like, it's not a deliberate knee-on-knee Darius Kasparaitis or, you know, Brian Marchment style hit. It just kind of a unfortunate incident where Drew Doughty tries to move out of the way and they end up knee-on-knee contact. But it's going to be tough. They already named Pietrangelo on the right side. They've got Cale Makar, Dougie Hamilton, Colton Parayko, Jared Spurgeon. I mean, it's a deep group on the right side.
We got a lot of good, not saying, just saying submissions to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. This one from Rager. Not saying it's Rand Deep's turn to get memed. I'm just saying, thank you, Matt Lee.
Yeah, Matt Lee, shouts to BCLC. Love Matt Lee, but that picture he took, I look wrecked in that. That was before any alcohol was consumed last night.
I know.
I look like I had a bit of a bender heading into that one, but no, it was just bad timing. My eyes were half closed. I'm like half looking at the camera. Mm-hmm. I got done dirty yesterday on Twitter.
Well, you're not the only one. Apparently, this texter says, I saw a YouTube video on Sportsnet of Dan and Randeep. Legit thought Dan was in his 50s.
Ooh.
Sorry, Dan.
Wow. You're the youngest one on the show.
I know, that's a funny thing.
Man, that's rough.
That's funny.
Lighting wasn't great.
Yeah. I'm the person with the most gray. Well, the only person with gray. Do you have a couple of gray?
I got
a couple of grays.
I don't see him in Randeep's.
Like, I got him on the side here, but...
And Randeep's too dapper in Metro. Like, you'd cover that ish up if it came out too, wouldn't you?
I'm getting there, though, guys.
Randeep's straight for the Just for Men, if that were...
No, I don't even touch any of that. Went to my barber, a week and a half ago?
Yeah.
He's like, a few more grays there, buddy. I was like, man, come on.
Man, yeah.
But, yeah, I'm getting there. So,
Canucks will do that to you.
I saw somebody send me a photo of myself yesterday.
Yep.
I'm so white now. I'm getting my hair is getting white. My beard's all white.
I don't know what our Sportsnet salespeople in Toronto are doing, but the Just for Men, if somebody's taken
Sat could legit be the model for Just for Men.
If somebody's taken over for Emmett Smith and Walt Frazier, it's this guy right here, folks.
Yeah, lame radio personalities.
Salt and pepper.
Here's Walt Frazier, and here's some schlep from Vancouver.
This my aura.
Not saying I didn't see Dan in the photo. I'm just saying there was a coffee mug in the way.
we were all rocking the coffees yesterday. Unsigned one here. Not saying PD is struggling. Just saying Joe Namath should be announcing any points he gets. Struggling.
Jay and Ladysmith. Not saying the Canucks hype video made me cry. Just saying that it tickled every single one of my nerdisms. We've got a wrong answers only coming up on the hype video from last night. More coming through. Torgi, I'm not saying Mangiapane won't be playing for Team Italy. I'm just saying Reach is voting for Team Canada.
Hey, man, he's leading the league. He's up there with Ovi and Elias Lindholm.
Another text saying we need to teach the morning show how to say Mangiapane. Are they a part of the Mangiapane group? Oh, nothing grinds my gears more.
Mangiapane.
Mangiapane.
Yeah, even...
It hurts to say it.
We've been hanging out with you so much the last couple of years that when I hear a mispronunciation like that, I cringe. The inner Italian in me comes out. Come on, get that right.
I mean, if you're in Calgary, how do you... I know it's happened a couple of times, but, you got to be throwing bread on the ice every time this guy scores a goal.
No, yeah. There's got to be a loaf of bread.
Yeah.
Maybe some olive oil.
Who's got the nice, calabrese, nice, round loaf?
Throw some balsamic on that.
But that's
loaf
a
too.
Waste of tasty bread.
That is true.
As a vegetarian, I approve of that more than, rats and octopus and all
that's
that, all right?
That's true. Torgi, I'm not saying your beard is weird. I'm just saying your stash is trash. That's well played. Well played, Torgi.
Here's another one from Rizzo from the Ridge. I'm not saying Randeep has to worry about a few gray hairs. I'm just saying, wait till your barber tells you have ear hair. We haven't got to that point. I'm only 30-something, all right?
Speak for yourself.
I don't want to say the age because it's getting higher and higher. 30-something.
Not going to lie. My barber, Dez, best guy around, by the way. Boombox Barbershop.
This guy with the plugs.
He I like this.
Did you get
He's a good
boombox?
Guy.
You got a discount?
I was there a couple of months ago, and he's just like, "Oh, you got a little of the Italian curlies coming out of your ear."
Oh, so that person I thought you were 50 is onto something.
At least you're looking out for me, Dez. That's what a good barber does. Anyways, it's gonna happen to the best of us. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda.
We really went down a dark path there in terms of aging.
There's
guys.
Some existential dread all of a sudden.
It is the People's Show coming up. We will get to the NFL. Mark Schofield is going to join us, our QB analyst, next on the People's Show.